Our next presentation will be by Chantel Wilson, Effect of Golf Course Turf Grass Management on Water Quality of Non-Tidal Streams in the Chesapeake Bay Watershed.
Thank you very much for the introduction, and thank you all for coming this afternoon. Today I'm going to really be talking to you about golf course turf grass management and why it's important to do water quality monitoring, especially in terms of nutrient management. So why study water quality on golf courses? I promise this isn't just so I can hang out and see some beautiful scenery. There's more to it. Turf grass systems are some of the most intensively managed land uses in the United States. The turf industry and golf courses are generally viewed by the public to be a significant source of non-point water pollution. And this is because there are significant amounts of pesticide water and fertilizer used on these courses to maintain aesthetics and playability and to keep the grass healthy. There are over 37,000 acres of golf turf managed in Virginia. Most of these golf courses are adjacent to streams and part of the Chesapeake Bay watershed. Many will have streams running right through them. Non-point pollution of surface waters from golf courses has not been quantified and therefore not been regulated by the Environmental Protection Agency. Golf courses have been identified by the Commonwealth of Virginia as a possible significant contributor to non-point source pollution in their watershed implementation plan. So this is an action plan that states develop to help meet TMDL, or total maximum daily load. This total maximum daily load is essentially the pollution diet of a water body. So the Chesapeake Bay has a maximum amount of a pollutant, in this case particularly nutrients, that the water body can receive to still meet designated water quality criteria and designated use standards. As part of the watershed implementation plan, Virginia will require nutrient management plans for golf courses before 2017. Virginia can revise these plans as necessary in order to meet the total maximum daily load criteria. So there is a fear that golf courses may be subject to future regulation with respect to nutrients. The goal of my project really is to quantify the impact of golf course turf management on the water quality of local streams, and do this in the context of the Chesapeake Bay TMDL. We would like to see if there's an improvement or degradation of water quality occurring, and to what extent, to see if further regulation may or may not be necessary, and hopefully steer it in the right direction once it comes. So these are the main objectives of my study I'm going to be talking to you about. The purpose of this talk, I'm just going to focus on the first one, assess water quality of streams on golf courses in the James River watershed, which is part of the Chesapeake Bay watershed, to estimate the impact of golf courses on individual Chesapeake Bay tributary or river segments in relation to the current EPA TMDL model. We're going to use our discharge and nutrient data that we collect. I'll explain this a little bit in my methods in a moment, from the James River. We're also going to survey golf course superintendents throughout the state to bolster our data. We will also be looking at other potential factors influencing water quality, these including soil characteristics and utilization of best management practices on our courses. This will just give you a quick idea of the Chesapeake Bay watershed in the state of Virginia. As you can see, there's a large proportion that is covered by the state of Virginia, above that dotted red line. That's all part of the Chesapeake Bay watershed. My study in particular will focus on the James River watershed, which is the big yellow segment. And there are more segments that are within each. We're going to focus on these a little more in fine detail. But for the purpose of this talk, I'll just stick with the James River watershed in general. As for the methods for our study, we're going to look at six golf courses in the James River watershed, and we've been taking grab samples just to analyze, take back to the lab, four times a year so far to represent each of the seasons, but we've decided recently to expand this to six times per year, the idea being the more you sample, the better. These grab samples will be analyzed for phosphate, nitrate, and ammonium, and total nitrogen. We're going to calculate the discharge volumes for the streams, using a velocity meter and calculating the area that we see with each stream. And select sites will be assessed for physical parameters, including temperature, dissolved oxygen, specific conductance, and pH. This diagram on the bottom is an example of an ideal sample site that we'd have. So the yellow bracket on the bottom indicates our, this yellow area here indicates the area of the stream actually influenced by golf course management. And then we have the in of our stream down here and the out over here with the direction of flow for the stream going across the top. So ideally we'd have one in and one out to compare, with the in representing the control or reference site. So we want to see if the water is at least as clean or will be degraded or maybe even improved by the time it reaches the out site. As you all know, field research can be a little more complicated than a simple in or out. Some of our golf courses have multiple streams associated with them, and some of them have multiple ins that correlate to a single out. So that just makes things a little more complicated. I'll discuss this in some of our data analysis later. And some of our streams actually will be connected to piping that goes under the surface that you can see on those orange lines, and some of them are actually drainage ditch areas. So more complications to the question. As for our results, so far, good news with respect to physical parameters. We haven't seen any significant trends of impairment with respect to dissolved oxygen, specific conductance, temperature, or pH on 8 of our monitored stream sites. But does this still mean we need to be concerned with nutrients or not? The short answer is yes. Nutrient dynamics mean that stream could actually transport nutrients downstream and still eventually reach the Chesapeake Bay, even if they aren't directly influencing the water quality of local streams. To orient you to the graph a little bit that we have here, this is my nitrate data, and the others that follow will be the same for ammonium and phosphate. We have averages of 10 samples taken over 3 years. On the vertical axis, we have our nitrate in milligrams per liter, and then we have a set of 6 golf courses. If I can orient you to this first set here, this would be an example of that perfect sample site with a single in and a single out. But then for our second course, for the second course, that would have 2 ins right here associated with this out, just to give you an idea of what we're looking at. For each of these, nitrate was below the 10 part per million EPA guideline. They use parts per million, but I'm going to stick to milligrams for later for the rest of my talk. It's essentially the same. But each of our sites were below that 10 part per million guideline for drinking water. It's funny because no guidelines actually exist thus far for freshwater streams of Virginia for nitrate. Although, in other studies I've come across, less than 1 milligram per liter is considered good, and 1 to 10 milligrams per liter is considered fair for water quality in terms of nitrate. As for a preliminary data analysis that we've done, this is still a continuing study. This is by no means finalized. We've only observed one slightly significant increase at this site here with the star. And the rest were non-significant that we were seeing. The significant one you see was actually right at the cutoff value of 95% confidence interval. So we're going to have to go back and look at it later. And the analysis is complicated with some of these other streams, and I'll explain this a little more on the phosphate graph because I have a good example to show you with the ins and outs that have, the outs that have multiple ins associated with them. As for our ammonium data, we see this similar things happening. Ammonium did increase at 5 of the sites on 4 courses, but we don't believe that these are significant thus far. We have to go back and analyze our ammonium and phosphate data further. But based on what we're seeing here, we believe that it is not a concern for local water quality in terms of ammonium. As for phosphate, we did only see one non-significant increase at one of the sites. Most decreased, interestingly enough, or remained at 0. The phosphate levels in all waters leaving our courses were below the EPA recommendation of 0.05 milligrams per liter parts per million. I want to direct your attention to this particular inn we see here at one of our second golf courses. This is actually from draining in from a really urban area, so there's lots of impervious surface, a lot of housing associated with this. As to the other down here, it's also another drain coming in, but it's probably a lot less volume of water. We have a out here that, okay, so it's right in between these two. What does this mean? This could mean probably one of two things. Either, yes, the golf course turf management is helping to clean up the water with respect to phosphate, or it could be a function of dilution. So we need to go back and look and see how much discharge volume is actually coming out of these streams. So, good news. Golf courses do not appear to be significantly degrading water quality of adjacent streams, at least for terms of local quality. Why might this be happening? Short answer is there are a lot of wetland and grass drainage areas that provide ecological services on most golf courses that allow for microbial denitrification, nutrient sequestration, and plant uptake. A lot of golf courses use integrated pest management in order to reduce their pesticides and balance fertilizer use through soil testing and improved turf cultivars, with the idea that you can use appropriate amounts of fertilizer and avoid runoff, or use appropriate amounts of pesticide and balance need and use. And probably the most important thing is the use of best management practices. A lot of our golf courses that we work on have buffer strips of reduced maintenance vegetation adjacent to streams. Not all of them do, but a lot will use this. Another important best management practice you can use to protect water quality is to avoid phosphorus application in high-risk areas, such as high-gradient slopes, or where it is not needed, as indicated by soil testing, or something very simple golf course superintendents can do in terms of nitrate is avoid depositing grass clippings in streams. So if you're wondering what I mean by buffer strips, these are some tall grasses that are less maintained around the banks of the golf course to try to help prevent runoff and act as a sponge to soak up some of those nutrients. This is a continuing study. We still have a lot of work to do. We want to look at those downstream effects that might affect the Chesapeake Bay. We're going to do this by collecting total end data to see how much can actually travel downstream and compare this to discharges with the Chesapeake Bay model, so we kind of put it in context with other land uses such as agriculture or urban management. We will also compare water quality data provided by golf course managers throughout the Bay watershed through their independent testing to our data to see what's actually happening in other areas of the state and other soil properties, management styles, things like that, so we can see in a bigger picture what's happening. At this time, I'd like to acknowledge our funding sources, the Golf Course Superintendents Association of America, the Virginia Golf Course Superintendents Association, and the Virginia Ag Council, and definitely those participating golf courses and superintendents. Without them volunteering their time and their courses, we wouldn't have been able to do this study, and the Urban Show and Holt Labs and the Water Resource Center. At this time, I'd like to take any questions you might have.
We have time for questions.
Yes.
You said you took grass samples 6 times a year?
We started it 4 times a year. He asked if we were taking grass samples 6 times a year. Yes.
How did you determine when to take those samples? After storage then?
So originally we were going to just look at seasonally 4 times a year, and we were focusing on base flow for terms of this study and not looking at storm flow directly, because we want to see what's happening just baseline non-storm events, because we know, for example, that phosphorus can move a lot during storm events, but what's happening with nitrate and ammonium and phosphate on a day-to-day basis when these storm events are far less frequent and more, you know, far and fewer and far between than everyday operations. So that's why we wanted to stick with base flow and non-storm events for this purpose. Yes?
Do Did you say what kind of soils you've done in the portions that you've looked at so far? And are they pretty similar?
So the question was of have we looked at the soil properties that we've had, what types are on the courses? We just started sampling last week, so we're just starting to work on that now. I can't really comment further on that yet.
Yes. Last one.
How do you determine statistically the difference between in and out at a single given point?
How do we determine statistically the difference between an in and out in a given point? We used the SAS PROC GLM to determine between the in and out. And
the single T test 10 times is yet. It's 30, 30 points. It's average over 3 years, so you did that.
Yeah, we used the means over those 3 years to compare.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.